This is After the Gridiron, a podcast featuring interviews with retired football players. Thank you for tuning into the show. Before we get to the episode, please make sure you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Today, another player shares his incredible football journey with us and talks about his life after the gridiron. You're going to love it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of After the Gridiron. I'm your host, Lyle Green, and we have, as usual, another great guest lineup for you today. Today, we have CFL legend Joe Mumford. So, Joe played 12 years in the CFL, 12 years of professional football. It started with the Shreveport Pirates when there was the U.S. expansion in the CFL, and finished up with the Edmonton Eskimos. And in between, he played with Hamilton and Toronto. He went to South Carolina State University, where he was voted one of the top 100 players of all time at the school. So obviously a great athlete there at South Carolina State. And in the CFL, we could go on for days of all his accolades he's had in the CFL. Three-time most exciting defensive player, a five-time CFL All-Star, two-time Grey Cup winner in 99 and 2005, and was voted into the CFL Hall of Fame in 2011. And now after football, he is working at his landscaping company. He owns a landscaping company called Monster Cut Landscaping. So, Joe, thanks for coming on and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lyle, man. It's always good to talk to a fellow Canadian player. Yeah, I know we sometimes get hard. We catch it hard here in the States, man, but it's good when we go up to Canada.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. All right. So, yeah, again, thank you for coming on. And I usually start off the show by asking my guests to say something about them that most people don't know about them. So what would that be for you? What's something about you that most people don't know about you?
I'm a decent cook. I worked in a CPS for a good bit as a kid. So my hometown is right off the water. So,
you can handle your business in the kitchen. Yeah. All right. So do you have a specialty that you like to make? Something that
I do pretty good at. Anytime my wife she always hints around, so I make her a seafood bisque. And a combination of it has shrimps and back fin crab meat and sea scallops and.
You're making the mouth water, Joe. You're making it. You're gonna have to send some samples up to Canada for sure.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right. So let's talk about your career. You obviously, like I said, you're a great player at South Carolina State. But before that, did you play any other sports growing up as a kid besides football?
I did. I kind of did everything. I did basketball, even worked out with the basketball team at South Carolina State. I won the track, and I won high jump in high school. So I won the medal for high jump in high school. Oh, wow. So kept the disc record in my high school for a long time, the shot put record in my high school for a long time. if it was something out there to do, I played soccer as a kid until soccer and football ran together. So, just whatever I could do, man, get out there and play.
You did it. Yeah. Nice. Nice. So I got to ask, how did you get your arms over the bar or in high jump, man?
Man, you know,
for those that don't know, you probably have the biggest arms in CFL history.
We had a very small school, and I tell you, my biology teacher was the track coach who knew nothing about anything besides biology.
Anything sports. Yeah.
So I would never go to practice. And I was just more athletic than everybody else. I would go work at a restaurant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So holding up the trays, that's how you got the big arms? That's what it was?
That's it. Yeah, okay. Actually, though, it's genetics. I'm so funny. I was looking at myself the other day. I was like, man, I'm still kind of decent and I don't work out.
Yeah. Yeah, genetics plays definitely a big role, and yeah, you're definitely blessed there. Okay, so let's talk about South Carolina State. How did you end up choosing them for university?
That's kind of funny. I was a recruiter for South Carolina State was down to look at a quarterback from another school. And he kept watching the tape, and they just happened to be playing my school. And he kept watching the tape, and I was beating up on the quarterback. And they was like, well, if we can't get the quarterback, I want to go see where this guy is. And, of course, being all these little small towns, everybody kind of knew where everybody was. And it's like, oh, that's Joe. He's literally 30 minutes away. You can just drive down there and see him. So that's what he did. And the kind of rest was history.
Okay. And did you have other schools that were kind of submitting offers, or was it mostly them?
A&T. And you know, right there when after I won the high jump, we were the state meet was at North Carolina State. So I ended up getting some interest from North Carolina State at that point. But at that point, I had already decided, man, I went to South Carolina State for a visit, and I couldn't get my mind off of them.
Off of them. All right. They made a great impression with you, I guess.
Yeah, I never seen that many beautiful women in my life.
Well, there you go. The truth comes out. All right, so yeah, talk about your time at South Carolina. You're voted one of the top 100 players there, so obviously you had a great career there. So talk about your time there.
It was as a matter of fact, we go back and I go to homecoming every year. It's probably one of the talking about bonds of friendship and family, you can't, you know, it was the perfect place for me. Football wise, I was one of the only few rookies to play with the upperclassmen. And with me playing, I had some veteran, linebackers. I played linebacker at the time. And I initially, coming from high school, I didn't have a lot of training in terms of football. I just kind of seek the ball and go to it. And then, of course, once you got to college, this is a whole different ball game of reading this guy and reading that guy. And I had no idea. And it was okay with most teams, but then you got a lot of black college football where they run into wing T and misdirection. And if you can't read, then it's a bad thing.
Yeah, it definitely helps knowing where the ball is going, and yeah, doing some studying on the offense and what they're going to do.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you had a great career, as I said, at South Carolina State. So talk about going to the pros. Obviously, I'm not sure if you had hopes of going to the NFL. I'm sure that's every kid's dream to make it to that level. But talk about possibility of going to the NFL if it was there, and if not, talk about your time going to Shreveport.
You know, my junior year, I was paralyzed for a year.
Paralyzed?
Yeah, I was paralyzed for a year.
Whoa, how'd that happen?
I went Jackson State had a pretty large running back, and I went and I stoned him, and I read the play perfectly, and I stoned him in the backfield, and it just so happened my head went down and my shoulder went down as they kind of separated. And I was paralyzed. I thought it was a stinger, but I was paralyzed for a year. So all I could do was make moves. I was blessed to be able to come back. But with all that being said, I came back and I was still a tremendous player. Black College Defensive Player of the Year. I was Jay Walker, Nick McNair, all these guys, you know, did the offense. Of course, I had, you know, defense. But they still were nervous from the fact that I was paralyzed. So with that being said, then I was what they call considered a tweener, you know.
In between linebacker and DN kind of thing.
Yeah. Linebacker and maybe a DB. And so Probably should have picked Miami with Jimmy Johnson, who liked the small linebackers, but I ended up choosing Cleveland, which was probably the other end of the spectrum when they talk about size and linebackers. They had Percy Snow and and Pepper Johnson, and then they had a bunch of older guys there that they were really trying to keep Cleveland in Cleveland. It's before they went to Baltimore, so
okay,
it wasn't a great situation for a smaller type linebacker. They were more of a bigger, stout type linebacker, so probably picked the wrong place. But at the same time, God knows where I was supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he tried out. So he did get a chance with in the NFL. So he did get
Cleveland. So I got a chance to go to Cleveland. And one of the reasons I thought it was good as well, they had, I don't know if you remember the guy, Orlando Brown, who was my teammate at South Carolina State. The guy that got hit in the eye with the bag.
With the bag, yes, I do remember that. Flag.
So I thought, you know, just being there and being around him, I thought it would be a good thing in terms of signing there. But never the case. Went through training camp and didn't make it. I thought I was one of the better linebackers, but, you know, that's my perception. I still thought I made a lot of plays and did a lot of stuff, but I think Cleveland was going through a different transition, and probably one of the reasons why I don't really like Nick Saban right now.
Oh, he was a defense coordinator at that time. Is that Bill Parcells was the coach, wasn't he?
I don't know. Was it Parcells? I can't remember who was the coach, but I know.
No, not Parcells. I mean, Belichick is what I meant.
Yeah, I think Nick Saban was the coach. So.
Yeah. Okay, so, so they didn't. Sometimes it's not always the best players that end up making it because, you know, they might draft a guy and just want to hold on to him because they don't want to look bad, you know, picking him in the draft. So he probably did play good enough to make the team, but that always doesn't guarantee you a chance to stay with the team. Okay, so you went from Cleveland. How did you end up with Shreveport and the CFL? I'm sure from the Blazer, you probably didn't know too much about Canada.
School, and then went to a coach. I went and played a coach wanted said, you know, maybe you should try some arena ball. So I went and tried some arena ball down in Charlotte, which wasn't that far from South Carolina State. Did pretty decent at that. And then that coach suggested CFL was in midseason and maybe I should give it a shot to go down to Shreveport. And went down there and probably 6 or 7 games. And I didn't know if I made a good impression or not, but that was the first year that I was there, and then they all the teams folded. So they had the biggest expansion draft. And so basically our whole team from there got moved to Hamilton. Everybody but Johnny Scott. I remember Johnny Scott being on that team. But everybody on that team was put on Hamilton. And I was the only one to make the team.
Oh, wow.
Everybody was cut. I thought I was going to get cut, too. I remember the day before the last draft, and they had a guy in Tim Brown. I think his name was Tim Brown, who played middle linebacker, who at the time, they moved him from his position because they brought in the great Calvin Tickle. In Toronto. And so at the time I was starting at the wheel back, I moved my way from fourth all the way up to first. And then they decide they're going to move him in my job. And I'm just like, so they start Tiggle the first half and they start him at the wheel. And then of course Tiggs did what he had to do. And then the second half, they took him and moved him back to Mac, and then moved back to Will. And I guess I made enough plays because they said, you know, I got the word from the trainer, you know, they only going to keep one American at the position and da-da-da and da-da-da. You know how it goes. And so, I, you know, they would always give out the papers and, you know, and all the phone calls are going off around you while you're in the dorm of people that they're cutting at 5 o'clock in the morning. So my phone didn't ring, but there was still a chance that I could get cut by going to the cafeteria. I was scared, nervous about
I was nervous about going to the cafeteria.
The cafeteria, yeah. You know, keep your head down, just walk and get your food in your bag.
You know the drill. Keep your head down. Yeah. You know, don't make any eye contact.
Exactly.
So I was able to go through breakfast. And it's so funny, I was walking across, remember to this day, I was walking across the campus over, you know, towards the cafeteria, and I see Tim like from afar, and he's got like the white paper, and I'm just like, well, maybe they gave him the paper.
Yeah.
But I'm still nervous going into the cafeteria. So So that was my, I guess, good point that, you know, out of all the people that they moved in the expansion draft, I was the only one that actually made it and stayed with Hamilton.
That stuck with him. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. All right, so before we get into more detail on your CFL accomplishments, I just want to go back to that year that you had to sit out. So being paralyzed, that's a huge thing. Did you ever think that, you know, that was it, or were you always sure that you would come back from that?
You know, when you're young, initially you think you're invincible. And then two, you know, I don't know if I ever thought that I wasn't going to play again. I just, when they told me, because I had what Joe Hagans had. I don't know if you remember great Joe Hagans, whose arm is still paralyzed. Well, yeah, I think he can move his fingers or something, but or grab, a little you bit, know, yeah. something. But so my arm was basically the same as his. I went and seen a neurosurgeon down in New Orleans, and he's like, one doctor that was taking care of me, and I think it was Columbia that I went to, he said I was paralyzed and I was going to be like that for the rest of my life. I ended up going to New Orleans and seeing a top neurosurgeon, and him saying that, I don't know what the doctor's saying, but, you know, from these tests, it looks like nothing was severed. Looked like the nerve is still intact. So, and most likely it's going to come back. I don't know when, but. And so at that point, I went with saying that, hey, it was going to be all right.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. That, I guess it's good to get two opinions or second opinions and to get,
So I remember laying down on the bench and not being able to raise my arm. So I couldn't raise my, like if I was standing up, I couldn't raise my arm. But if I was on a bench, I had the movement of pushing.
To raise
like
it.
A push. It wasn't raised, it was kind of like pushing. So basically I was using my tricep more than anything.
More than, so, okay, yeah.
And so I would lift my arm up with my left hand, I'd lift my right hand up to the bar. And then grab the other part with my left hand, and I would just bench press. Probably was pretty dangerous, but at the same time.
Oh, wow. So you're doing bench press?
I started out with just the bar, pressing it. And, you know, as you go, any athlete, you know, allowed with the tenacity that we have to be as preventing. I always laugh at people and say, yeah, I could do that. It's like, you don't really know what a professional athlete is. Talking about the NBA or NFL or this group or that group. But until you actually understand the sport, you don't know what a professional athlete, you don't know the level of a professional athlete. So with that being said, my mindset was coming in like, oh, it's going down. Add another play.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, definitely as an athlete, we're definitely relentless and push through all the barriers that come in our way for sure. Okay, so let's talk about your time in the CFL. You were three-time most outstanding defensive player, won a couple great cups. So talk about your experience in the CFL, and did you ever think you could achieve those goals? I'm guessing you probably did, but talk about that and winning your first Grey Cup in your experience?
Well, I felt like the CFL game was it was when I talked to you earlier about being a tweener. I felt that it was I felt that it was a place for me in terms of my speed, my ability, my strength. I felt like all of that played in the hands of what I could do. Now, when I started out at linebacker and then moved to middle, you know, went to middle linebacker, and I, you know, as T's got hurt and stuff like that, I moved around. And then when Joe Hagans came in, I remember.
So you played some middle linebacker too?
Yeah, played some middle linebacker. Okay. And it's 1 year right up there with the lead in tackling.
Yeah.
But I still say I was a great middle linebacker, great linebacker, period. But also say that I remember from a Canadian standpoint talking to Donovan Wright, and Donovan's and coach initially telling me, "Hey, Joe, we're going to move you to defensive end. If it don't work, then, you know, you're probably much out of here." Because Joe Hagans, who could do cover a little bit more, because the wheel backer in this league.
You got to cover.
You got to cover. And at the time, they had, you know, people out there with speed out there, you know, coming off that edge with, what's the guy, Drummond out of, you know, Toronto, world-class speed and stuff like that. So, pinball, backfield. And things of that nature. So Donovan told me, this might be the best thing ever happened to me.
It definitely was, I think.
Yeah, I was like, it's like, if you can get that, you're going to get paid more. Things are going to happen. So fortunately for me, I was able to, the first year, I remember a guy saying, "Oh, man, you're not that good at it." Even though I had 9 sacks, he says, You only have one move.
What?
Yeah, so after that, you know, once I moved over to the position, I had a guy named Jeff Cummings who was like, "Look, man, just think of it as like basketball. Go down and post up." And because he had a good spin move for a big guy. He was a large guy and he could spin. And I remember him saying, I was like, "Man, you got to teach me that spin." And when he showed me that spin, I was like, "Oh, this is my move.
This is it." Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think, you know, once I moved from linebacker in my second year at defensive end, I felt like this was it. Because I went from 9 to 20, and then the first person in the history of football to average 20 plus sacks in 9 in 4 straight years.
That was unbelievable.
Is it 21, 19, 24, 26? And then, you know, of course, in the CFL, they don't count a sack if the quarterback fumbled the ball. And so
So you lost a few on those.
And
so, there's no half sacks either.
Yeah, Damon Allen always, and there's no half sacks. Damon Allen always kidding me. Said, "Man, you always fumbling the ball, man."
Oh, go ahead.
No, so, so moving to the position, man, was just really began being creative and being able to use everything, because, you know, at the time SWAC was premier. That's Alfred Payton, was
pass rusher,
pass rusher in the league. And but I wanted to take something from everybody's style, but his style was totally different than any other style out there. His style was.
Did you study like other pass rushers and kind of learn stuff from everybody?
I studied a lot of pass rushers. At the time, Melvin Hunter was a guy that I kind of enjoyed watching. But a lot of the guys, they still weren't like me in terms of what they did. So I kind of watch some of the bigger guys do it. And then I kind of got a lot of the hand stuff for some of the guys on my team, Obi Hispanic, some of the guys that didn't do a lot in terms of on the field, but they were able to teach me how to do it.
Techniques, yeah.
And then we had a great concept of what you're, as we say, what do what you do best in terms of your job.
Yeah.
And we all knew what everybody did well. So, and there was no jealousy. Mike Philbrick, Mike Campbell, and those guys, Jeff Cummings, and you know, Tim Terry, and all, everybody knew what they, their job was, and they did it and was happy with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, when you have great great teammates and guys that help each other out and have the common goal of winning, which is what we all want to do. And you're able to do that a couple times, winning the Grey Cup in 99 and 2005. So talk about those experiences and how those were for you.
Well, I think the 99, and now think about it, we just had our, last year, we just had our 20-year reunion.
Oh, anniversary, yeah.
Yeah, anniversary. And just thinking about the fact that it's happened and they haven't had a Grey Cup there since then, I remember, I thought, I guess looking at the Last Dance with the Chicago Bulls and stuff like that, and thinking about our team and things like that, I often think at the time we could, you know, you could think, we're going to be here again, we're going to be here again.
We're going to do it again.
And don't, you know. Although in 98, we felt like we should have beat Calgary for the Grey Cup. And when it didn't happen, we already knew we were going to win the Grey Cup next year.
The next one.
We just waited for it to happen. And I just remember coming back into town and everybody being happy and the mayor and, every, you know, the city parade and stuff like that. And just remembering how much and seeing how much people put into the city of Hamilton, put into their Tiger Cats, and how much was it, you know, we just think of it as football. They, you know, a lot of them is like, this is our life. This is, you know, this is what makes us
happy. So much of them,
you know, we decided, you know, turn our lights on for a while just so we could have enough money to pay for these tickets, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so that, just felt a great sense of pride to be able to bring it back to Hamilton.
Yeah. That's one thing you kind of realize now with the way that society is with no sports, how much sports is loved and beloved by people and how much it matters to people. And, you know, when you win these championships, it's not just for us, the players, but the people of that town or that city have definitely have a big part of that and a big enjoyment of winning as well as us.
Yeah. So, that was, and then in Edmonton, you know, it was a little different. I felt like KD.
Oh yeah.
They hired the trained assassin to go kill.
The trained assassin. Yeah.
You know, Edmonton had a already, I don't know if you noticed it, a lot of teams had certain cliques and certain groups that they hold
core guys
higher than the actual players. I didn't experience that in Hamilton. But I experienced that in Toronto, and I experienced that in Edmonton. And so, although I enjoyed the city of Edmonton, and I was welcome into the city of Edmonton, I consider myself, you know, black and gold, just because like Edmonton had, you know, AJ Gass, and you know they had their core players and groups that I guess they were upper management type. And I was like, they got upper management as players.
Yeah.
You know.
Some, a little bit of pull. Yeah.
And so although I had, you know, with DB and gosh, can't think of his name right now. A lot of the players welcomed me in. I worked out with them and stuff like that. Shannon Garrett, those guys like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Really welcomed me in and part, you know, I still talk to them every now and then. But it was a different situation. I went down there, I knew what I had to do, and I went out and did it. And so when it was over, I guess they got what they wanted, I got what I wanted, and we kind of moved on from there. But those are two different ends of the spectrum in terms of winning a Grey Cup.
Winning a Grey Cup, yeah. Yeah, not every Grey Cup is made the same, but yeah, obviously it's more of a better feeling with the first one. Always the first one, yeah, it tends to be the best one, but yeah, a different experience in 2005 for you. Okay, so let's talk about life after football. Oh, go ahead.
Now, I always say, though, every Grey Cup team we've had a saying. You know, we start out with a saying, and in Hamilton was the ring is the thing. Always the ring is the thing. And then in Edmonton, was something I came up with was dig deep. Anytime something go on, dig deep. And so that's inscribed in our ring. So
in the ring. Okay.
Yeah. So with that being said, both of them were great, but there's definitely a different feel of the ring. Although the whole ring and the whole atmosphere was different because they felt a certain way about the ownership in Hamilton at the time. So I don't know why they felt like the ownership was a little less because they were owners from Toronto, and there was always that love hate between. So that was
aspect to it. Yeah.
Who has passed, one of the owners, and McDonald, they always treated me well. I never had any complaints, but it seemed like there was always this buzz around them that they weren't the right owners for the city.
For the team. Okay. Okay. All right. So yeah, let's move to life after football now. You mentioned that you have a landscaping company. So talk about how you started that, and if it's something you were planning to do, or how do you end up starting your company?
Well, you know, initially I started working with abused kids at a facility and really engaging in kids that were sexually, physically abused by their parents and stuff like that. So I was in that for a while. Then I started doing some coaching. But all of that really just kind of kept me away. So I started a landscape company, man, and kind of been enjoying this for a while.
Okay. And are you a one man team? Do you have a big crew? How's your the format of your company?
No, it's just me and a couple of, you know, I bring in one or two guys in throughout, but mostly just, you know, a lot of just me and getting it done.
Get it done, yeah.
I do, you know, flowers. I do just about everything. So
cool, nice. So it's enjoy working with your hands and doing the physical thing and still being active.
Yeah, it's peaceful. You know, a lot of times when the stress of the day comes, you can kind of get out there and just be at one with you. You know, yeah. I told myself I was going to record my day because I've seen so many different animals out there when I'm working.
Oh, really?
I've seen probably a...
What kind of animals do you see?
75-pound snapping turtle. I've seen, what? Yeah, this thing was huge. I've seen, you know, get wild turkeys all the time, all kinds of geese and all kinds of, all different, you know. I've seen you know, beavers and all that. Yeah, I see.
Oh, wow.
you see snakes and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, man, you got the traveling zoo that you get to
get
around. Okay, so let's finish up. I usually finish up with what I call a top of the mountain moment. So kind of looking back on your career and all your accomplishments and all that you've gone through on your football journey, do you have a favorite story, favorite moment, words of wisdom for younger players? How would you like to finish things off?
Not favorite moments. I think what the CFL, what was unique about, I know just being in Hamilton and just being in that whole Ontario area, just being able to take the train and stuff like that, and be on the train with fans coming back from Montreal and things like that was just beyond just football. It was a sense of family, which, you know, I thought it for me as a player and being a country boy and coming from a small town, it just kind of felt home. So, yeah, the whole thing was just all about family life and being in Hamilton and the Ontario area.
Yeah.
Always a great experience for me.
Awesome. Yeah. That's one thing about the CFL. It's like a big family and makes the game fun. That a lot of the guys that I've talked to and, you know, compared, they've been in both leagues, say that, you know, the CFL is a fun league and a league that, you know, caters not just to the players, but the fans and has such a family atmosphere like you're mentioning. So, it's great that you were able to experience that in Hamilton and something that's going on around the CFL, around the league for sure at all the different stops. So, Joe, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on and enduring all the hiccups and all the things that we've gone through to get this done. But thank you for your time. Appreciate it. And all the best in all that you do and staying safe there and with all this COVID and all that that's going on. Hope you and the family are all doing well.
All right, man. Will do, man.
Thank you for listening to After the Gridiron. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure you subscribe to the show and also leave a rating and review. By doing that, you also help to spread the word about the podcast and assist others in finding the show so more people can enjoy this great content. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, with the links to those being found on the website. Your support is very much appreciated. Also, please visit the resources page on the website for links to our sponsors and affiliates. Their support helps to keep the show running. So go to www.atgridiron.com/resources to check them out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you when we kick off our next episode.